Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. An empowering hour we're about to face. We're going to go deeper into a concept to allow people to realize we've been played on every aspect of our lives. And it's time that we simply became conscious of this so we could make more appropriate, reasonable, and sustainable choices. We're going to have, of course, Health and Nutrition, University of Surrey, article published in the Journal of Medical Microbiology that talks about how green tea can help resolve antibiotic resistance. Well, when you consider how many tens of thousands of Americans die because of different types of antibiotic-resistant microorganisms, that's good news. Something inexpensive, easy to get, and safe? Yes. I'll share that with you. But write down some numbers now, because you never know when you tune on the radio at your local station that I'm not there, for whatever reason. But we're always here, where we originate our program, through the Progressive Radio Network, Monday through Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Time, Tuesday evening, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour. So here are the numbers. To listen live, you call 774-337-6068. That's 774-337-6068. To download a program from the archives, call 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail, a question or a comment, call 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. Also today, we're going to hear a bit about why passivity breeds mediocrity and mental illness. And also, what about the fact checkers? Who checks the fact checkers? Because when we did, we found that they were not honest, not accurate on so many issues. It's like Wikipedia. I wouldn't trust anything Wikipedia has to say. And we have a new article coming up in a couple of days on Wikipedia, and not one but two new books coming out on Wikipedia. So it's hard to know who do you believe today. Well, just look at who's been accurate in the past, which journalists, which publications, which radio, television programs. And more often than not, they can make errors, but at least it's not intentional. So we're going to deal with that today also. Also today, we're going to have some new information from Germany about how a study finds that indoor concerts can be safe during COVID. That's good news. Then we're going to also learn about how the rapid tests that are asking people to be taken every day, they detected only 32% of asymptomatic COVID cases. Wow. That meant they were wrong 68% of the time. That's a huge amount of wrong. That means that a person who has got COVID but doesn't have symptoms could be spreading it to other people. The University of Arizona will share that. And also something I mentioned 10 years ago, what happens when it gets too hot for livestock to be raised? As a vegan and as a person that's run an animal rescue my entire adult life, I'm very concerned about the welfare of animals. So the new information from The Guardian, quote, the sun will cook them. Is the U.S. Southwest getting too hot for farm animals? Yeah, it is. And as a result, animals are dying because of the heat stroke. So we'll deal with that. Also, time permitting, I don't have a guest today, but I want to get into a few hard lessons. And one is from John Whitehead, published in Global Research about after America after the election, a few hard truths about things won't change. Good. He's always interesting, always credible, and always honest. And also, I'm going to be sharing Beyond Postmodern the Neoliberal Roots of Woke Cancer Culture from Aereo, Seid, and Marty Stern. I'll be adding my own commentary at the same time, so we have a lot to share. Let's begin. First, on health and healing, we know that green tea is important. I mean, there are tens of thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature. It works. It works for preventing cancer. It works if you have cancer. It's just one example. It stimulates the immune system. It's terrific. But scientists have now reported that compounds present in green tea may improve the efficacy of antibiotics against antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And this was done in the University of Surrey's School of Veterinary Medicine in the UK. And they noted this is because of the compound, what we call EGCG, EPA, gallicocatechin gallate. That's a chemical inside of green tea, and that's the superstar. And as with the like hundreds, thousands of plant compounds, it's a potent antioxidant. And this means that it can help protect the body against cellular damage caused by free radicals. It's just one of the many things it can do. But the compound increases the bacterium's permeability, which allows antibiotics to pass through more easily. And this ability could prove helpful in the fight against multi-drug-resistant strains of bacteria, which kill a lot of people. And in fact, an antibiotic commonly used to fight off infections caused by Pseudomonas bacteria was very successful. So, one more thing to help kill bacteria that is otherwise resistant and dangerous. By the way, there's one other thing that's been used for a long time, and now the science is supporting it, and that is cinnamon bark oil. It kills multi-drug-resistant bacteria. Cinnamon bark, B-A-R-K, oil. And a combination of different nutrients can do this as well. So just good news. Also, from the Central Food Technological Research Institute in India, comes a study about the EPA plus DHA, that's your essential fatty acids. You can get them from fish, you can get them from walnuts, avocados, flaxseed. When they're together with ginger, they positively modulate hyperlipidemia-induced brain dysfunction. And that means extreme oxidative stress to the brain. And that plays a big role in pathogenesis of cognitive disorders, like dementia. In effect, one of the causes of oxidative stress is extreme stress, unrelenting stress, unrequited stress, stress that's there day in, day out. Now, stress can come from multiple factors. Right now, it's because of the economy, people's jobs, financial insecurity, food insecurity, also family insecurity. Imagine how the breadwinners, the mother and father in a family, imagine the stress that's on them when, as hard as they work, sometimes two, even three jobs, it's still not enough to cover their basic expenses. It can't cover their rent or mortgage payment, car insurance, and car payments, credit card payments, of which frequently people are living off their credit cards. And as long as you have a trust, as long as you know, you have parents who are wealthy, and that's about, more or less, 17 million adults. These are our professional class. I've said a long time ago, and I'll say it again, there is no 1%. It simply doesn't exist. Because with about 332 million adults and children and infants in the United States total population, when you look at how many of those people are actively engaged in work, and you separate all the senior citizens who've retired. Some, of course, have been forced back into the workforce, but the majority who grew up in the 1940s and 50s and 60s and 70s, they tended to be more conservative with their money and didn't get deep into debt because their parents had gone through the Great Depression and the Second World War. That's 16 years of financial deprivation. So they tended not to buy what they couldn't afford. And then their children came, my generation. And we were the first generation, many of us, to actually go to college. I was the first person to graduate from college in my family, at least that I'm aware of. And that was true for a lot of my friends. And then we just had it so easy. You know, there were so many jobs available. Cost of everything was inexpensive. I remember when I first came to New York City, I went to a movie on 42nd Street, which was nice at that time. It wasn't a danger block. And it was a quarter. I saw the movie Shenandoah, Jimmy Stewart. 25 cents I saw a movie. I thought, this is good. And so you could live inexpensively. And hence New York City, and that includes, of course, not just Manhattan, but the four other boroughs, were mainly filled with working class people. They not only worked in the city, but they also lived there. And a long time, multiple generations, some going clear back to the 1800s, early 1900s, when immigrants came to the United States and settled. There was Germantown over on East 86th Street, that area around 3rd Avenue. It was called Germantown. Hofbräu, all the restaurants. And then Chinatown, Little Italy, down on Carmine Street. Yeah, you don't see that anymore in any great degree. Everything has been homogenized and mainly genderfied, but now ghettoized. So when you wake up one day and realize that you've lost a sense of your security and certainty and sustainability, you're going into stress. That means that chemicals such as cortisone and epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, adrenaline, these are all going to go shooting up, and with that oxidative stress, and that's going to hurt your arteries, it's going to hurt your heart, it's going to raise your blood pressure, it's going to raise your blood sugar, it's going to exhaust your adrenal glands, so you're then going to be hyped up on coffee or caffeine in order just to get up in the morning or get through a day. And then you try to find work if you have it. You're lucky if you do, and you're stressed even more if you don't. But think about all the professionals, my group, my group of people who, my generation, doctors, lawyers, engineers, architects, scientists, and small business people. And once you're in that field, you were pretty well protected. People who became professors were there until they retired. Then they got the full benefit of that retirement compensation. Not true today. So when you add in 18 million people who are actual professionals and their family, and 12 million millionaires and their families, well, now you're more or less at 70 million people who are living at the upper end of, let's say, a high-end standard of living. I'm not trying to comport this with quality of life, just standard of living. And there's a basic philosophy today. Either you make more money to compensate and keep your standard of living going, which is extremely stressful, making you far more susceptible to obesity, diabetes, heart attack, stroke, and just a lack of quality of time for anything. It's important, especially to yourself. Or you reduce your cost of living, which I suggest, and I do, so that whatever you are making, you can live on it and have a quality of life by going more towards an austere, not to an ascetic level. I'm not asking people to go out and live in a cave. I'm asking people simply to ask before you buy something, do you need it or do you want it? Big difference. And will your life be different if you don't have it? And for the children of baby boomers and then their children, the X generation, two lost generations, everything was about succeeding, getting theirs, and now they have all that, and now a crisis happens, and it all seems so flaccid, so superficial. Quality of life is what's important, and I believe that's the next important movement. There'll be the fourth industrial revolution, which is starting to happen now, and it's not good. I'll explain that in more depth in an article that I'm writing, but then you have a new fourth generation of quality of life, which is very good, very positive, very optimistic, where people are looking to appreciate what they have instead of being forlorn about what they don't and angry and resentful. So we're going to have a big divide coming, and that divide will determine quality of life and whether or not you're going to prematurely age your brain and have a stroke or ischemic episode because you just couldn't handle how to deal with what you took for granted, the future, your life, your security. So in one sense, the Central Food Technological Research Institute in India simply said that when you're having healthy food, and certainly the essential fatty acids are very healthy, there are thousands of studies on how it helps your heart and your brain, but if you add ginger into that, now it can help bring down your cholesterol level. That's the hyperlipidemia. And also the oxidative stress in your brain. When you add in meditation, green time, being around nature, that also plays an important role in allowing your body biochemistry to be healthier, in balance, reducing oxidative stress. And a healthy plant-based diet, which is a part of this, you're going to live a longer life. Also from Seattle's Children's Research Institute, vitamin D levels during pregnancy are linked to the child's IQ. This is published in the Journal of Nutrition, a major journal. This was done at the Department of Child Health, Behavior, and Development at Seattle Children's Research Center. And what it says is very simple. Vitamin D, we all know, is a critical nutrient and has many important functions in the body. A mother's vitamin D supply is passed to her body in utero and helps regulate processes, including brain development. And a study just published today in the Journal of Nutrition showed that mothers' vitamin D levels during pregnancy are associated with their child's IQ, suggesting that higher vitamin D levels in pregnancy may lead to a greater childhood IQ scores or lower. So something to consider. Very important. Get your vitamin D. And finally, beetroot, or beets, that's that simple. It's a root vegetable, that's why I call it beetroot. There's really no root to it. There's a peptide in it, and that can be used to treat disease. And this is from the Medical University Institute of Pharmacology in Austria. And this is a brand new study, and they isolated a peptide, which is a small protein molecule, from beets. And the peptide is able to inhibit a particular enzyme that is responsible for the breakdown of messenger molecules in the body. And due to its particular stable molecule structure and pharmacological properties, the beetroot peptide may be a good candidate for using with those who have inflammatory diseases, such as neurodegeneration, autoimmune, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, arthritis. Those are all inflammatory conditions. So what's the simple answer? Have some pickled beets. Pickled beets are giving you probiotics, a lot of them, good for your intestine, good for your microbiota, all of the microorganisms in your intestine, which help your immune system. Also increases nitric oxide, which is good. And the nitric acid, I should say, increases the blood flow through your body and improves heart function. So it's just good all the way around. And now one more thing it does that's important. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about how red meat is linked to cancer. All red meat linked to cancer. Tel Aviv University and the Sorbonne in Paris, published in the British Medical Journal Medicine. So that's one of the major articles tomorrow. We are 19 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, some thoughts about whoever wins the election, what's going to change, and also some studies that I think are important. They're good. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and we are publishing articles constantly, every day on PRN.fm. I want to thank the 1.3 million people who've downloaded the show recently, and also the 7 million people who've been watching the videos that we post up on YouTube. A lot of people sharing information. But here's what our group, meaning those who are more progressive-minded, we're looking for the truth, not an ideology to hide behind or be led by the nose and the brain. In our opinion, and I've spoken with so many, the outcome of this particular election, or for the last, let's say the last 40 years of elections, in the end, for the average person, for the environment, for society, for those who've lost their jobs by companies being purchased and then stripped down of their assets and the brand sent overseas to be made in India, Haiti, Bangladesh. Nothing will change. We like to believe that everything will change. Nothing will change. I'll give you some examples. I'm going to share some examples from John Whitehead, who I just spoke with, by the way. And John's very interested in our lawsuit against Wikipedia, one of the heavyweight constitutional lawyers we're bringing in. So let's just, for a moment, suspend bias, identity politics, and just look realistically at what really matters. Now, you can name it whatever you want. You can name it the deep state or the 1%, when it's not really the 1%, because if you look at who's most powerful, it's about 1/1,000th of 1%, the ultimate billionaires, of which there are only about 400 more or less in the United States and only a little over 2,000 worldwide. But you look at the technological advances that are controlled by them, the industries controlled, the media controlled, and then you look at the technocrats, the highly educated professional class, then you're dealing with, all told, not just 17 million, but their families. So you're dealing with more or less around 20% to 30% of the American population. Little difference when you see how formidable change becomes, because those are the people you do not see marching. You do not see that professional class, with few exceptions, who are leading efforts to have general strikes. For example, doctors could say, we're going on strike, except for those who work in emergency care and hospitals, which they're needed, but for chronic care. We're going on strike until everything about medicine that doesn't work is changed, like the control of big pharma and the high prices of anything, like a snake bite in one case cost over $150,000. A friend of mine had a stomach ache, went to the emergency room, and they gave him an ice pack and an IV of saline solution, just some water and salt. And they charged him $10,000. $10,000, that's it. And that is normal. So is any of this going to change? No, because the people in the industries who profit from it are not going to risk challenging anything, even when it could help everybody. So the deep state's not changing. The elite are not changing. The controllers, the masterminds, the shadow government, the police state, the surveillance state, the military-industrial complex, the food-industrial complex, the banking-industrial complex, they're not changing. Is Wall Street going to change? Not at all. They love every candidate. Well, they don't love the Green Party candidate. They don't like Jill Stein, Ralph Nader. Of course they don't. Rocky Anderson? No. But they love the Clintons, the Obama, the Bushes, because they never do anything that limit their capacity to exploit people's ignorance to profit. So as long as you understand that it is irrelevant which party occupies the White House this coming next 4 years, it is the unelected technocrats, the bureaucrats, that actually calls the shots, and they call the shot based upon who is giving them the orders, who paying their salaries, who pays for these large funds that go into think tanks that then select their most articulate people to go on television to talk about why something is when it's not. So if you want the truth of all this, and this is a hard truth, a bitter truth, I acknowledge that, we have been in a police state for almost 40 years. But if you're not committing a crime or being arrested, you wouldn't notice it. But how about the tens of thousands of Americans who've had their cars stopped and had all their assets taken from them that they had on them, even their cars sometime, through asset forfeiture? Yeah. Then suddenly they realize asset forfeiture is real. Now, how about all the people who were using marijuana and spent seven or more years in prison because of Clinton and Biden and Obama and their justice departments? Yeah. And where was the last special in the major media to hearken that we should end all of the war on drugs? Because just be honest, how many people have died in the war on drugs? If you go around the world and look at all the countries, not just Mexico's 200,000, it's over 1 million people. And the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been made by organized crime because they're illegal. And all the money spent in militarization of the Department of the DEA, Drug Enforcement, and other agencies. So you see, as long as money is being acquired by one group of people, they're going to oppose anything that would challenge that in any area of life. So is any of that going to change? And the answer is no. For example, I'll be very specific. Police militarization will continue. Why? Because both the Democrats and Republicans have agreed in these joint pieces of legislation that there's going to be federal grant programs that allows the Pentagon to transfer surplus military supplies and weapons to local law enforcement agencies without charge, and police forces will continue to be transformed from peace officers to heavily armed extensions of the military, complete with jackboots, helmets, shields, batons, pepper spray, stun guns, assault rifles, body armor, miniature tanks, and weaponized drones. Today, according to John Whitehead, quote, 17,000 local police forces are equipped with such military equipment as Black Hawk helicopters, machine guns, grenade launchers, battering rams, explosives, chemical sprays, body armor, night vision, repelling gear, and armored vehicles. And some actually have tanks. And they're doing this because the average citizen is out tearing up the streets? No. And yet you see these people present when there's peaceful demonstrations. Now, rioting should be outlawed, meaning it's against the law. But we've seen local police just stand by and allow people's stores to be destroyed. That's a criminal activity. I don't care what they justify it for. It's non-justifiable. So we are a country divided, and we ought to understand who is behind this. Also, one of my biggest pet peeves for decades, and I've talked about it at length, is the overcriminalization of everything. You know, where is the time where people talk through issues before simply arresting someone? There was recently an article and a video of a young five-year-old who their little tiny wrists were too small to put handcuffs on. Why would you put handcuffs on a five-year-old or a seven-year-old or a nine-year-old, and yet they're doing that? This is what happens when the police say, I'm just following orders. But I thought in Nuremberg we said no person engaged in any activity on behalf of the state can use the excuse any longer. You have to be responsible, and if something's not right, then you have to call out and say, this isn't right. I'm not handcuffing this kid because they're having a temper tantrum. We're criminalizing a temper tantrum in school. So we have over-criminalized everything today except the one thing, the corruption of politicians, the media, that we still allow. So all we have is a bureaucracy working with the House and Senate, passed and written in law by the president, that churns out laws and statutes and codes and regulations that reinforces powers and value systems in those of the police state and its corporate allies. And it's always the corporate allies that are behind this. And we're going to continue that no matter what. And thanks to an overabundance of 4,500-plus federal crimes, that's how many there are, and 400,000-plus rules and regulations, it's estimated that the average American actually commits 3 felonies a day. Every 24 hours, everyone in this audience commits 3 felonies without even knowing it. In fact, according to a law professor, John Baker, quote, there is no one in the United States over the age of 18 who cannot be indicted for some federal crime, end quote. Consequently, we now find ourselves operating in a strange new world where small farmers who dare to make unpasteurized goat cheese and share it with members of their community are finding their farms raided, with home gardeners facing jail time for daring to cultivate their own varieties of orchids, without having completed sufficient paperwork. This frightening state of affairs, where a person can actually be arrested and incarcerated for the most innocent and inane activities, including feeding a well and collecting rainwater on your own property, is due to what law scholars refer to as overcriminalization. Now, according to John Whitehead, jailing Americans for profit, that's a big business. And who wouldn't support that, right? The Democrats support it, the Republicans support it, the presidents all support that. So more power to them. The more Americans you can arrest and jail, the more profit it's going to give to the companies that you're getting funds from. So you're in a perfect situation, a perfect crime, to commit people who have not really committed a crime to paying penalties, both with their time incarcerated, their reputations, a record, and fees. At one time, the American penal system operated under the idea that dangerous criminals needed to be put under lock and key in order to protect society. Today, as states attempt to save money by outsourcing prisons to private corporations, imprisoning Americans in private prisons run by mega corporations, and that's turned into a cash cow for big business. In exchange for corporations buying and managing public prisons across the country at a really great discount to them, the states have to agree to maintain a 90% occupancy rate. 90% of all those beds must be filled for at least 20 years. Well, such a scheme simply encourages incarceration for the sake of profits, while causing millions of Americans, most of them minor, nonviolent criminals, to be handed over to the corporations for lengthy prison sentences, which do nothing to protect society, and no civilized country in the world would even consider. Would have to be at such a low-life, degenerate level as Saudi Arabia or United Arab Emirates or one of the other states that you don't want to visit, you don't want to be in because you have no rights whatsoever. Some megalomaniac, narcissist, idiot who runs the country has all the power. You have none. Well, what about other countries? They don't give lengthy prison sentences unless it's the United Kingdom. They're just as vile and dumb as the United States when it comes to this. And yet that's what happens. Thus, although the number of violent crimes in the country is down substantially, the number of Americans being jailed for nonviolent crimes, such as driving with a suspended license, is skyrocketing. Well, if you have the inability to pay your debts, and you don't even have the money for gas for your car, and you can't get, you don't have the money for new registration, and so you drive with a suspended license or registration, you had no choice there. And people don't realize what a person will do when there's nothing else they can do. If you had children and you had no food and they were starving, you'd steal food. But now we put people in jail for that. Also, what's not going to change big time, it's going to get far, far worse, is poverty. Poverty will continue to increase, despite the fact that we have 46 million Americans living well below the poverty line, and another almost 80 million Americans at the poverty line, according to that 122 million all told. That's a lot of people. That's one-third of the entire American population. And 66 million of them are food insecure, meaning they're going to bed hungry and malnourished. So let me think. When was the last time Congress says, we've got to feed people right now, healthy food, not garbage food, not expired food, and don't tell us that the churches have to do it or some food bank will do it. No, it's the responsibility of the federal government. And suddenly the Republicans will pull their hair out and take their dentures out and take all their prosthetics out and start to cry and suck their thumb. They're so immature, such spoiled, petulant brats, because they've equated human suffering with it must be their fault, they're lazy and stupid. With, I'm going to church this week, a mega church where my pastor flies an $80 million private jet so he can be closer to God when he prays. But don't ask me to act like Christ, because that's foreign to all the churches in America right now. There is no Christ in Christianity right now for many, not all. But we don't call these people out for their hypocrisy. In any religion, we don't call out the hypocrites. We should. We don't call the hypocrites out in Congress, and we should. You're willing to make an overly engorged, completely obese, a completely pathological National Defense Agency group, the military contractors, even richer, and Hungry Americans, not a morsel. That's how we're looking at this. So keep that in mind. Endless wars also are going to increase to enrich the military-industrial complex, having been co-opted by greedy defense contractors, corrupt politicians, and incompetent government officials. America's expanded military empire is bleeding the country dry at a rate of $15 billion a month. That's $20 million every 60 minutes. For what? Nothing that de-ghettoizes America, nothing that helps bring jobs back, where we could have work zones in every community in America. We could get rid of the Rust Belt. We could get rid of all the ghettos in America for that same identical budget. And yet, there's no demonstration anywhere in America, not a single demonstration against the military-industrial complex. In fact, we've been so brainwashed, we actually think that they're part of our salvation. They are not our salvation. And so, the government will continue to spend on foreign wars. That does not include the cost of maintaining and staffing 1,000-plus military bases spread around the globe. Incredibly, although the U.S. constitutes only 5% of the world's population, America boasts 50% of the world's total military expenditure, spending more on the military than the next 19 largest countries combined. In fact, the Pentagon spends more on war than all 50 states combined spend on health, education, welfare, and safety. Yet what most Americans fail to recognize is that these ongoing wars have nothing to do with keeping our country safe. Nothing. So that's how it is. Also, police shootings of unarmed Americans will continue, no matter what our party politics, race, religion, or any other distinction used to divide us. We all suffer when violence becomes the government's calling card. Remember, in a police state, you're either the one with your hands on the trigger or you're staring down the barrel of a loaded gun. At least 400 to 500 innocent people are killed by police officers every year. Indeed, Americans are now 8 times more likely to die in a police confrontation than they are to be killed by a terrorist. Americans are 110 times more likely to die of foodborne illness than in a terrorist attack. Police officers are more likely to be struck by lightning than to be made financially liable for their wrongdoing. As a result, Americans are largely powerless to face in the face of this militarized police, unless we agree that we have to completely reorganize how the police are trained, who is allowed to become a police officer, and let the police officers come from the neighborhoods that they live in so they can return there non-weaponized to walk the streets and speak with the people every day so that the people know that that person who is one of us is also there to help them resolve their issues in a non-violent way. When that is done, then we have made progress. Also, SWAT team raids will continue. More than 80,000 SWAT team raids are carried out every year on unsuspecting Americans for relatively routine police matters. Nationwide, SWAT teams have been employed to address an astonishingly trivial array of criminal activity or mere community nuisances, including angry dogs, domestic disputes, improper paperwork filed for an orchard farmer, and misdemeanor marijuana possession. That's just a brief sampling. On an average day in America, over 100 Americans have their homes raided by SWAT teams. And they're only getting worse, not better. The government's war on the American people will continue. We the people are no longer shielded by the rule of law, while the First Amendment, which gives us a voice, is being muzzled. The Fourth Amendment, which protects us from being bullied and badgered and beaten and broken and spied on by government agents, is being disemboweled. Consequently, you no longer have to be poor, black, or guilty to be treated like a criminal in America. All that is required is that you belong to the suspect class, meaning the common citizen. As de facto members of this so-called criminal class, every U.S. citizen is now guilty until proven innocent. The oppression and injustice, be it in the form of shootings, surveillance, fines, asset forfeiture, prison terms, roadside searches and so on, will come in all of us, or for all of us, eventually, unless we do something to stop it. And finally, government corruption will not only continue, but astronomically so. Remember, the government is not your friend, ever. Okay? The government is the enemy. Please understand that. Now, that does not mean, and I'm not inferring or trying to conflate the issue, that there are people who work in government agencies who are necessary and important. I'm talking about the government agencies themselves. We don't need an Internal Revenue Service and all of its agents. The Treasury, according to the Constitution, is the only one supposed to and legally allowed to print money and distribute it. It could do so for zero interest. Think how that would help us. We could have the government forgive all of our debt, student debt, interest debt, mortgage debt. Mind you, 40% of all student debt is owned by the government. If they did it for major corporations and banks, they could do it for us. But we didn't march to make that point clear enough. So the government is corrupt. Its leadership is corrupt. The department heads are corrupt. The officers are self-involved and self-enriched in their mindset. Oh, I've got a government job. I can get rich, or the corporations I come from, I'm going to represent them. Hence, people from Big Pharma come and run the FDA or the CDC, and that's how it works. So Americans of all political stripes rank the government as the number one concern. In fact, almost 8 out of every 10 Americans, 80%, believe that government corruption is widespread. Our so-called government representatives do not actually represent us, the citizenry. We are now ruled by an oligarchical elite of government and corporate interest, whose main interest is in perpetrating power and control. Congress is dominated by a majority of millionaires who are, on the average, 14 times wealthier than the average American. And the rise of the surveillance state will increase, and that is because the government working with Silicon Valley, they're watching us. They feel that they have a right to watch everything we are doing, every word that we say, every photograph we take. Every single second of every day, they want to know what we're thinking and doing. And now they're going towards trying to find, using the latest in artificial intelligence, what we're thinking, what we've ever thought, and create a gigantic biometric database for that. And by the way, technology now makes it possible for the police to scan passengers in order to detect contents that what's in your pocket or purses or briefcases, etc. Full body scanners, which perform virtual strip searches of Americans traveling by plane, have gone mobile, with roving police vans that peer into vehicles and buildings alike, including your homes. And the erection of a suspect society continues. And this is the most concerning to me, because due in large part to rapid advances in technology and a heightened surveillance culture, the burden of proof has been shifted so that the right to be considered innocent until proven guilty has been usurped by a new norm in which all citizens are suspects. This is exemplified by police force, our terrorism liaison officers. These are firefighters, police officers, and even corporate employees who have been trained to spy on their fellow citizens and report suspicious activity, which includes taking pictures with no apparent aesthetic value, making measurements and drawings, taking notes, anything at all that puts you into one of their fusion centers. And now they're making the president, whoever it is, an imperial president. And that imperial president can do whatever they want, the Constitution be damned. Remember, the Constitution invests the president with very specific limited powers to serve as commander-in-chief of the military, grant pardons, make treaties with the approval of Congress, appoint ambassadors and federal judges, again with Congress's blessing, and veto legislation. In recent years, however, American presidents have anointed themselves with the power to wage war, unilaterally kill Americans, torture prisoners, strip citizens of their rights, arrest and detain citizens indefinitely, carry out warrantless spying on Americans, and erect their own secretive shadow government. The powers amassed by each past president over the last 40 years is inherited by each successive president and just added on to. And that's what we have now in the presidency. and also the government's manipulation of natural crisis in order to expand its powers. And I believe the COVID virus is a good example of that. The virus is real. It certainly has killed a lot of people who have comorbidities. But when you take the actual tests used to determine do you have you been exposed to the virus, and then you see how false that test is, and then you conflate the numbers of people who test positive but are completely healthy, and you make that an active case to scare people, and then the government comes in and starts controlling every part of your life, there's an agenda here. And where is this leading? It's leading to the fourth industrial revolution, which I'll discuss on an upcoming program. Just some thoughts about where we're going, no matter who occupies, because everything I just said will not change one iota, no matter who's in the White House. And that's the problem. I'm going to take a break and come right back at you. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to play a little clip now. This is something I think you'll find of interest. It's why passivity breeds mediocrity and mental illness. It's not long. Please listen in.
This is one of the most urgent problems for civilized man. He has created civilization to give himself security. Security for what? For boredom? His chief problem seems to be that most human beings need a certain amount of challenge, of external stimulus, to stop them from sinking into the blank stare and blank consciousness of the idiot. For most of human history, leisure was a rare luxury. Toiling from dawn to dusk just to survive was the lot of almost all men, women, and children up until a couple hundred years ago. The English geologist Sir Charles Lyell wrote that in the 1840s, America was a country where all, whether rich or poor, were laboring from morning till night without ever indulging in a holiday. With the onset of the Second Industrial Revolution in the late 19th century and the rapid intensification of the division of labor that went with it, there occurred a leisure revolution. Not only did this period of rapid industrial development drive many from the farmlands into large cities in search of work, but the regimented hours associated with industrial work left the masses, for the first time in the modern era, with scheduled free time to direct their own activities. Well over 100 years have passed since this leisure revolution, and the fruits of civilization have become more plentiful and leisure more bountiful. Perhaps more than at any point in the history of civilization, the average individual today is free from the daily struggle for survival. But with this newfound freedom, a crucial question confronts each of us, that being, what are we free for? In other words, how are we going to use the time we have that is not devoted to the necessities of life? Few contemplate this question. Rather, as with many important questions regarding how to live, most people sink into conformity and implicitly assume their free time is best spent resting, relaxing, and passively consuming. And as a result, such lives assume a common mold and follow a course analogous to the one described by the 20th century philosopher Richard Taylor. Most people are, in the most ordinary sense, very limited. They pass their time, day after day, in idle, passive pursuits, just looking at things, at games, television, whatever. Or they fill the hours talking, mostly about nothing of significance, of comings and goings, of who is doing what, of the weather, of things forgotten almost as soon as they are mentioned. They have no aspirations for themselves beyond getting through another day doing more or less what they did yesterday. They walk across the stage of life, leaving everything about as it was when they entered, achieving nothing, aspiring to nothing, having never a profound or even original thought. This is what is common, usual, typical, indeed normal. Relatively few rise above such a plodding existence. Some may argue there is nothing wrong with this type of normal existence. Modern life can be high-paced and stressful, and with mental health problems on the rise, perhaps what is needed is more time spent resting and relaxing. The prolific 20th century English writer Colin Wilson, however, disagreed with this sentiment. Too much inactivity, rather than promoting mental health, tends to breed unhappiness and a plethora of psychological problems. Wilson came to this conclusion early in his life. In his autobiography, Dreaming to Some Purpose, he notes that as an adolescent he struggled with bouts of depression and sympathized with the wisdom contained in the Book of Ecclesiastes, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Wilson, however, had an astute mind and was intent on discovering why he always felt so gloomy. He began to observe that his bouts of depression were typically preceded by prolonged periods of passivity. When he did not occupy his days with interesting tasks, challenges, and problems to solve, he discovered that depressive moods would soon wash over him, fog his perceptions, and cause him to become a pessimist of the human condition. The idle mind is the devil's workshop, or as Wilson writes, boredom, passivity, stagnation, these are the beginning of mental illness, which propagates itself like the scum on a stagnant pond. If Wilson's discovery of the connection between passivity and mental illness has merit, then we are confronted with the following options. We can waste our leisure in idle pursuits, leave our untapped potentials untouched, and render ourselves prone to mental illness. Or we can strive to spend the majority of our free time creating, exploring, learning, doing, challenging our capacities and improving our talents. While the latter option entails perseverance, struggle, and the sacrifice of short-term pleasures and comfort, the payoff, mental health, and personal growth is worth the effort. The mentally healthy individual, writes Wilson, is he who habitually calls upon fairly deep levels of vital reserves. An individual whose mind is allowed to become dormant so that only the surface is disturbed begins to suffer from circulation problems. Neurosis is the feeling of being cut off from your own powers. But what if Wilson's discovery of the connection between passivity and depression is not applicable to all, but only to a minority who, like Wilson, possess an unusually strong creative urge? Maybe for some people, passivity does not breed the suffering it did for Wilson. Would this mean that the struggle to spend our free time engaged in creative activity is a waste of time and energy? In his book Restoring Pride, Richard Taylor provides a cogent argument for why the struggle to produce and create is always worth the effort. For as he explains, it increases our possibility of being able to attain the rare state of pride. Taylor defines pride as the justified love of oneself, and notes that while many people claim to love themselves, more often than not their self-love is not pride but narcissism or an arrogant shield to protect their underlying insecurity and self-hate. To be truly proud, Taylor explains, one must have the kind of love that is justified by the kind of person you are. That is, you must cultivate an extraordinary skill in a specific domain and thus attain personal excellence of the kind that sets you apart from others. The idea that some people are superior to others offends the modern taste, for as Taylor points out, many have confused equal rights with equal worth. Just because every individual has natural rights and should be treated equally before the law does not mean that every individual possesses the same worth. For the ancient Greeks, this was self-evident. They recognized that while most dedicate their life to fitting in with the herd, a relative few cultivate an uncommon virtue or skill, produce a work of exceptional worth, or proceed upon a path in the pursuit of personal greatness irrespective of the applause or opinions of others. And as Taylor notes, it is these latter individuals, the superior ones, who alone can love themselves in a manner not based on false pretenses. Therefore, the next time we find ourselves with leisure and the freedom to direct our own activities, rather than reflexively reaching for the remote, engaging in passive activities on the internet, or socializing about superficial subjects, we should ask ourselves if the comfort and pleasure these activities provide is worth the cost. For even if our passivity does not plant within us the seeds of pessimism and depression, then it most certainly is decreasing our worth as a human being and minimizing our chances of ever being able to achieve the self-love that accompanies genuine pride. Or as Taylor explains, some people, no doubt, are born and destined to be common, to live out their lives to no significant purpose, but that is relatively rare. Most people have the power to be creative, and some have it in a godlike degree. But many people, perhaps even most, are content with the passing pleasures and satisfactions of the animal side of our nature. Indeed, many people will account their lives to be successful if they get through them with only minimal pain, with pleasant divergence from moment to moment and day to day, and the general approval of those around them. And this, notwithstanding.
And there's more on that. Again, things that we can think about that might be on what we had normally think about, and I agree with some of the things he says, but I also believe that based upon the work I've done on life energies, that there's a large group of people who do not need to achieve what others achieve, but master their lives and master their commitment to their families, friends, and the quality of the work they do. And more on that on an upcoming program. And they have been the least appreciated, and yet they are central to everyone else's life. Something new today, brand new today, exciting. It's a brand new product. And over the years, I've gotten so many requests where people say, you know, I start my day with green apples and lemons, and I can't always do it, and I can't always get to the store to get the green apple, etc. So I went ahead and made a new stuff. It's called Green Apple and Lemon Stuff. Yeah, very simple. I got the highest quality apple fiber, then the green apples, then apple juice, lemon juice. It's that simple. Natural lemon flavor and stevia. It'll take some of the sharpness of the lemon out, so it's very pleasant to drink. And we're just introducing it today. Hopefully that people will see how important this is to start their day with this. And to make it even more pleasant today, it's the whole value of it is $104.94. And you're only paying $49.49. That's a huge savings. That's over 50% savings. And you're also going to get a video, a documentary on shopping and cooking healthy. So we all want to eat healthier foods and live longer. I'm hopeful that most of you would do that. But how do we shop for healthy, nutritious foods? And how do we then prepare and cook the foods or make raw foods in a healthy manner? It's an hour-long video, and where I take you through how to do all this from shopping, and I show you which things to buy and why, things that can help us prevent illnesses, heart disease, and other conditions, and have better digestion, detoxify our liver, purify our blood. These are things we have a lot of power on if we make the right choices. This is an extremely informative documentary. It's a real shopping trip and a cooking trip into the kitchen, showing you how to prepare these foods once you have them. So all this is in this package. You're going to get a package. You're going to get your brand new bottle, just came in yesterday, of green apple and lemon stuff. Tastes delicious, is good for you. I won't go through the peer-reviewed scientific literature, but you can do that yourself. Just Google lemons, then Google green apples, and you'll see why this is so important for you. All right? I'm going to give you a number to call. Here's the number to order your green apple and lemon. We only ordered in 1,000 bottles, I believe, or 1,500 bottles, a small, just to see if people like it. It's made a big difference. I juice it all the time, but it was just fun to see how easy it is to get the juice. And I don't have time today. We're running out of time, but I'll tell you how many equivalent green apples and lemons you would have to do juiced in order to get what's in this powder. Here's the number to call for your green apple and lemon stuff. Start your day with that. First thing in the morning, when you go in the kitchen, take one scoop, put it in any beverage, water, whatever you want, drink it down. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And for those of you who order through Neil in the vitamin closet in our main office, I'll give you his direct number. 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. I think it will be a very nice addition, and it's completely original because it's very specific. I never make claims. I don't tell you what I know it will do. But for those of you who've been drinking your green apple and lemon juice each day, you already know that. This just makes it a whole lot more convenient. You can travel with this. You can even take this to work with you. Call 877-627-5065. Have a nice day, everyone.